Hello, hello, y'all. Hey, it's me, Robin. And before we get into today's episode, I'm here to let you know that the club is open right now for new members. I'm going to take a couple minutes to fill you in on all that the club is offering right now. So if you know for sure you're not interested in joining the club, you're just going to want to hit the forward button a few times until you hear that baffling behavior show jingle. Okay, so the club is a virtual community for families of kids with vulnerable nervous systems and big baffling behaviors. Many families in the club are parenting kids with a history of complex trauma, but definitely not all. Some are parenting kids with vulnerabilities that emerge from their neurotype or their sensory system or their giftedness or their neuroimmune disorder. And of course, some have no idea why their child's nervous system is so vulnerable. The primary purpose of the club and why I've created it the way that I have is connection and co-regulation. Because when I reflect back on my time as a therapist, it wasn't the skills and strategies and tools and techniques I taught parents that mattered the most. What mattered most was how connection and co-regulation strengthened their owl brain so that they could stay more regulated in the face of the chaos in their home. Then they could, number one, actually use the tools, and number two, start to feel a little bit better even before the tools started to work. The club can be accessed online both through your browser on your computer and through an app. And it's open, of course, 24/7. There's a very active forum, a huge video library, and multiple live events every month. Sometimes I teach a masterclass on a specific topic. Sometimes we come together for group coaching or just to ask questions and pick my brain. We have two sessions every month called Connect and Co-Regulates, and those are designed to offer exactly that. There's no teaching, no coaching, just a place for you to be seen and heard by people who get it. Currently, we are also offering once a month bonus sessions for siblings of dysregulated kids. The club is intended to be kind of like a buffet. There is a ton in it, not because you're supposed to do everything in the club. You take what you need when you need it and come back when you're ready for more. If you could use a little extra support, consider joining us. You can read all about all the details over at robingoble.com/the club. I'll put a link in the show notes. And we're open today until the end of the day, Friday, May 3rd. All right, y'all, here's that episode you're waiting for.
So when your kid's behavior is baffling, and yours is too sometimes, yeah, I know. Let's take a break from all the bamboozle here on the Baffling Behavior Show.
Hey, 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 y'all. It's me, Robin Goble, and you have tuned in to the Baffling Behavior Show, or the podcast formerly known as Parenting After Trauma, where together you and I take the science of being relationally, socially, and behaviorally human, and I translate that for all of you parenting or caring for or educating kids with vulnerable nervous systems, big baffling behaviors, histories of toxic stress and complex trauma, our neurodivergent kids, so many things that can lead to this nervous system vulnerability. And sometimes we have no idea what has led to the current experience of nervous system vulnerability. But we come here together to try to make sense of it and to figure out how can we help our kids be their best them. Today, I am bringing some guests on the podcast, y'all. We haven't had guests on the podcast in a while, and I am excited, honored, thrilled, overwhelmed to bring to you dear friends and colleagues from back in Austin, Sue Marriott and Ann Kelly. You might know Sue and Ann. Well, if you are from Austin, you know Sue and Ann because Everyone knows Sue and Ann. They're just fabulous. But you might know Sue and Ann from the podcast Therapist Uncensored, which is one of the top social sciences podcasts in the world. They've been podcasting forever, it feels like. I've been a guest on their show at least twice. I think twice. I had the great fortune of being an in-studio guest many years ago when I lived in Austin. And then a few years ago, we met virtually and I had the opportunity to be on their show again. And this time, it's my turn to introduce Sue and Ann to my audience. Now, Sue and Ann are just about to release a book. It comes out April 30th. That's next Tuesday. The title of that book is Secure Relating. And besides just looking forward to getting together and chatting with Sue and Ann, the reason I really wanted to have them on the podcast and introduce them to y'all is that their ideas behind secure relating and focusing on the concepts of secure relating as opposed to focusing on secure attachment brings us so much hope. And I think it brings a lot of hope in our adult relationships and in our global community, which is what Sue and Ann tend to talk about most. But it brings us so much hope in our parenting relationships, and especially in parenting kids who are struggling and kids who are activating our own nervous systems. This idea of coming back to the now, to the moment, and thinking about our relating with them in this moment, as opposed to focusing on our past and our histories, I just think is so powerful and full of so much hope. Plus, Sue and Ann are a blast. So I'm going to stop yabbering. And we're just going to get right to this episode. It's a long one, as guest interviews usually are, because I was just having such a wonderful time with Sue and Ann. I can't wait for you to meet them if you haven't already. This is a lovely conversation full of hope. And, oh wait, I said I would stop yabbering. I forgot. Sue and Ann asked me a while ago if I would host their virtual book release, and I said yes. So that is next Tuesday, May 1st. It's a virtual party, so you can come, and I've got the links to register down in the show notes. All right, y'all, here's Sue and Ann. Sue Ann, it is so fabulous to have you here with me today on the podcast and really just to have time to reconnect with one another. So thank you for being here today.
We're so excited to be here. We have loved staying connected with you, and we love to be able to come on the show and talk more.
And yeah, Robin, we have seen you grow and your material evolve, and I can't think of anybody that's doing it, well, certainly exactly what you're doing with kids for parents, but especially being able to translate the science where it's so accessible. It's so incredible. So we just are huge fans.
Yeah. Thank you. I was saying before we recorded, y'all have been just so supportive of me and my career, man. We've known each other a long, 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 long time. And it's always definitely, you've always felt like folks who are kind of there and in my corner. And, you know, as I've grown up a little, right?
And certainly moving, have. Oh my God.
Yeah, shifting into a million feeling more downloads. Collegial. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations. It's wonderful.
So, of course, I told everybody at the beginning that y'all are the hosts of Therapist Uncensored, which has been since when? 2015, 16?
I think it is 2015. I think we're on our ninth year, isn't it?
That's insane.
That is. Wild. That is wild. All right, you two. So finally, you've put your noggins together and you're putting this new book out into the world, Secure Relating. Now, when I say finally, I really mean that. Like, finally, we can have this.
It has taken so long. It's been painful process.
Oh, well, I don't mean it like that. I mean, like, on a selfish perspective, I mean, I finally get to have this thing I can have of yours. So Secure Relating. Let's just start there. Tell me about what you mean by that. Like, yeah, let's just start with Secure Relating.
So Sue and I have been focused and love the research and the application of attachment and interpersonal neurobiology, just like you. We've been thinking and dreaming and talking about it. And where we landed with Secure Relating is it's the integration of all of that into being able to apply it into your everyday moments, your everyday, instead of thinking about just attachment and how we have been raised in our childhood and where we land now, we feel like the focus on being able to relate in the moment with one another in our best, most secure self, and to really focus on that helps us. It's just so hopeful and it's so doable, and none of us react perfectly, and we never live in our secure, most secure selves. But our goal is to help people think about moment to moment ways that we can find our secure selves and relate in that moment to bring out more secure connections with those people in our lives, our children, or.
I wanted to pause the episode real quick and read you this testimonial from one club member. This person writes in, "The club has been life-changing for me. For me, feeling alone in the stress and the overwhelm of parenting a child with complex trauma has been traumatic. Here in the club, we are finding healing for ourselves by feeling seen and heard and validated, even though we may have come here for our children's healing." Oh, y'all, that is exactly what I'm trying to do in the club, to create a space that's for you that also brings healing to your kids. So the club's open for new members until April 28th. We'd love to have you. RobinGoble.com/the club. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. And yeah, one of the differences is a lot of times when people are familiar with attachment, you think of it in categories like I'm preoccupied or I'm dismissing or he's dismissing or whoever. And so the way that we're framing it up is more of like, ooh, I've dropped into a preoccupied moment or I've slid into a bit of an avoidant space. And the better we get at being able to sort of visualize what that looks like and know in our body when that happens, then both. So like when Ann and I are interacting, right? Like we do it on colors. So there's a spectrum, and in the middle there's green. And as you slide more zipped up and withdrawn, you go blue kind of down. And then as you get a little bit more activated, as you know, sympathetic, just activation, and you want to fix things and solve things and move towards it, then that's what we call that red, kind of like trending red. And so the idea is that not only can you get, you know, really good at noticing in any given moment where your activation is, hopefully, because the truth is when we're dysregulated, we don't know it. We think we're right. So as we get better at noticing that, then, you know, going back to Ann and I, you know, like I can see it in her, and then I'm better able to know how to co-regulate, and she can see it in me. And rather than coming, if I'm in my turtle shell, rather than coming and like knocking on the shell and like, come out. She, you know, can be more skilled at like, okay, if Susan must be feeling some level of threat, so I need to like watch my tone. You know what I mean? Make sure she doesn't feel trapped. Kind of more of a seductive, hey, when you're ready, like a more gentle touch that will be very, very effective at helping me come back and get more socially engaged.
I love so much how you're, shifting the conversation around attachment and even secure attachment to look at it so dynamic that we're constantly shifting. And I was introduced to that idea from my work with Bonnie Badenoch. It's really kind of the first person to help me feel in my own body the truth of that. And the relief I remember feeling of that it's not static, that it is dynamic, it shifts, it ebbs and flows, and then the hope of that it can shift more.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think, we're all emphasizing hope because it really shifts how we engage. When we're in our fear, and as parents, we are so often activated out of fear because we want to do the best that we can. We want to have secure kids. And sometimes the theory around attachment is motivating, but sometimes it's scary. Am I doing this? Am I creating a secure child or anxious child? And so then we're focused on the outcome rather than the moment, right? Rather than if I can just engage in the most secure relating way in a moment, that's all I need to focus on. And it affects everything. It affects how we think. It affects how we engage. And that is the best way to try to help security come out in each other. And that's the hopeful part is, I can just change in this one moment. I don't have to change my entire being or my entire history. And I can have a more secure relating moment and really feel like I can sink in. And it makes such a difference.
Yeah, the way you even just said, I think there feels like almost this contrast to me in this idea that there's so much hope. Yet at the same time, like oftentimes I think about hope as this like in the future thing.
Yeah.
So here we're bringing together like the hope is because we're actually going to stay focused on the here and now. Yeah. And the piece that's right here, the piece we can touch now and not think so much about what is going to happen in the future? What does this mean for the future?
Yeah. And, one of the specific things that we talk about in that same regard about the being present in the moment is, there's this idea of don't focus on the bug, which basically what that's about in the book is that we tend to focus on the thing that's out there, the child's behavior, the thing that just happened. And again, the more that we do that, it's more of a sign that we've a little bit lost. We've been a little bit slid maybe out of that green zone because we're so, and you did this and it's because of that. And, I'm pointing my finger because that's kind of how it feels, yeah. Right? It's like, I'm only doing this because you did that or whatever. Yeah. And, I wouldn't be upset if you didn't slam the door when you come in or whatever, but this practice is more of noticing first. It's like working from the inside out instead of the outside in. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden I have a spike of irritation or something. And that the train, kind of the practice is like noticing that first, and working inside out so that that's then something that that I'm more interested in that. And which then is going to help me connect to more of my whole mind to then respond to my activation rather than whack-a-mole trying to fix everything out there so that I feel better. So that's kind of, it's not only just in the moment hope, but it's hopefully the skill of what to do. And again, I know that your training is so good about regulation and trying to work on people taking the breath and basically it's a very similar, it's like getting back into your secure, grounded self before you move.
Yes, that's a clear place with self, which is just
right, exactly
like you've said a million times, like that's so hard. I mean, once we get kind of dysregulated, we lose that. And that's by design. Like physiologically, we're supposed to stop focusing on ourselves. Uh-huh. And so to create more space where we can, kind of return to that.
Yeah. Well, we're supposed to stop focusing on ourselves, but in doing that, we actually get quite selfish.
Yep.
Again, by design.
Yeah, we're in our self-protection, right? Like because when we're self-protecting ourselves or our children, right? That's all we can see is think of, we see things in black and white and that's the thing about coming back in the moment, because when we're activated, we think right this second is everything, don't we? It's yes. like this one engagement I just had, I screamed at my kid and I know I'm not supposed to do that. And I just, oh, this is horrible. And we get really caught. And I love what you're saying, Suze. I either can go, I had to scream because he or she was doing this, or sometimes we go inward, right? Yep. And we're like, I suck as a parent. Yep. I can't believe I know better. I know yep. better. Yep. I think that's the most painful thing, is we all know better, right? But we don't always do better.
Well, yeah, we know better in one part of our mind.
Yes.
And when
yes.
that's accessible, we do what? We do great.
Yeah, exactly.
But when we're activated, we can't do better. And then I think that is one reason why we really love to talk about the spectrum and the visuals. You know, when Sue's saying green, that's the, we like people to think about that's like our secure go place that's in the middle. Mm-hmm. Because if you can use a visualization, that's, you know, once you get used to thinking about things and visualizing it, when you're activated, you need something to grab onto. Yes. At least I do.
Yeah.
Right. And so in a moment, if I can grab onto that, okay, wait, where am I? You know, like, if I can imagine Sue's way down there in the blue, instead of she's just being, you know, stonewalling or just being a jerk, mm-hmm. you know, like, then I start attributing all these false black and white kind of thinking. If I can visualize where my child is really activated, if I can say, okay, I might have screamed at you, that's because I was so activated. Like, if I put my mind to bringing my green self forward, of my secure relating self forward, what would I do next? What would my best self do in this moment? Right. And then we're not talking about me as a whole person. We're saying in the moment, what yeah. could I do to rectify this? Yeah. To me, it's hopeful in that one moment. So I screamed and yelled. And instead of getting preoccupied in my own mind about how bad I am or how bad my child is, I go, okay, wait, in this moment, I just need to find my grounded self. And we love to be able to visualize that. Okay, how could I move towards the green? What are those skills in this one moment? If I don't stomp up the stairs and chase them, and I give myself a moment to breathe, then when I do go up, I'm going to be more centered. And that's all I have to focus on, is that one moment, instead of the future hell I just created in my child's, you know, life because I was a jerk in that one moment, you know?
Yeah. Would it be all right if we paused for just a second and really talked about this model you're talking about, green, red, blue? And I do think a lot of my listeners have some beginning attachment language. And so if you even want to kind of dovetail them together with attachment language, and then maybe I can pop into and talk about maybe how it relates to the things we talk about a lot here, which is our owls, watchdogs, and possums.
You want me to go?
Sure.
So if you will visualize, and again, this is, there's some great graphics and stuff like that in the book, and there will be some on the website that you can pull down. But if you'll visualize like a spectrum, a horizontal spectrum, and by spectrum, we mean that it's not specific colors, that they go in gradations, and in the middle is the green. And as it moves to the right, towards red, which is, you know, kind of preoccupied, anxious, that's when our nervous system is moving towards the problem. That is when we lose contact with ourselves a little bit, and we get very focused. It's when our attachment system gets activated, and we think that the solution is to hold on. Mm-hmm. And whether it be our words, we get real wordy, we text a lot. We, you know, I think sometimes about with kids that, you know, like that feeling of, you know, your teenagers in their room and you're standing outside the door, like so much wanting to talk to them, and you can't, you know, you notice every movement they make. And as they walk through, do they say anything, you know, like that's a little bit, it's like that teenage love or something mm-hmm. of like where we're very, very focused on them. It's just a little bit, I would call that a little pink, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And then what would it be like to like move back into a more secure place? Like when they're ready to talk, they're going to bring it to me or what have you. So that's just one side of it, right? So that's associated with preoccupation. And what there's another just about the model, the colors are about state, but then we also talk about maps, which are about trends. So that would be associated with internal working models. Mm-hmm. And one thing we haven't said yet, and Anna, if you'll do the other side of it, but one thing we haven't said yet is the wider picture, where we also think about this related to culture and systems that create insecurity, you know, so that we can pull back and look at like our whole community is dysregulated, which is causing us to be more polarized and see the other person as the opponent or opposite, or so we can even apply this to that wider lens. And I'm not sure, Anne, what part you want to pick up. And then there's also a part about sunglasses, which have to do with information distortion, which happens when we're dysregulated.
And just dropping into bringing it to the attachment language, which you've already pretty much done. But like you said, with the map, if we see developmental attachment falling into kind of integrating into this map, which is then the red is preoccupied or anxious attachment. So those, when you think about the category of anxious or preoccupied or ambivalent attachment, that would be the red. So if you tend to have really predictable strategies, or your child does, over and over again, and that's where they lean, and they use those strategies more, that would fall under preoccupied attachment. And then the green is what we refer to if you kind of live, have the privilege of being raised in and living where your body can feel secure, that would be the green, where you maybe live more in a secure related attachment style. And then the other side, as you go blue, is more, it is more of a down regulation, more of a distancing from attachment related anxiety. It's there. Overwhelming, and so we distance from it. Mm-hmm. And so that is more the blue we see more is dismissing attachment and avoidant attachment, I guess, depending on which one you're talking about. So, and as you lean blue, it's more of a activated way of, this is overwhelming to me, so I'm going to cut off my feelings and be very motivated to try to help get away and cut off feelings in other people or get away from them.
I like how both of you have said that, you know, metaphorically we can think about as you go to kind of this, the red side, there's the strategy is to move toward, and move towards the, what's uncomfortable, move towards the anxiety, like really give a lot of energy to like, how do I fix this problem
right now?
Yeah.
The pressure.
I felt a little called out when you talked about all the texts, but anyway.
Hey, I was calling myself out too. So
I can do both though. I've got strong boths for sure. Whereas that blue side is a little more of like kind of backing away or moving away from your own sensations as well as maybe what's happening relationally. Is that an okay way to kind of think about this?
Yeah. I think it's a wonderful way. And what about your owls and your possum? I'm not positive that it will perfectly relate because it's also, because that's the neuro part, right?
Sure.
You want to speak to that?
So yesterday, it is, of course, nothing is going to totally overlap. Yesterday, a colleague of mine said something that he said before and reminded me of it. He said, all theories are wrong and some are useful. Like, oh man, if
that's wonderful.
Anything truer. No, you know, so I love having a lot of different metaphors available. Because we all resonate with something a little bit differently. And then some of us resonate with several different ones and they don't have to match up perfectly. That's why they're metaphors. So, you know, I think if I was going to, you know, talk about this real broadly, it sounds like that green space is more of the, what I would talk about is the owl pathway, which I tend to, you know, connect more with that ventral vagal state and that capacity to pause, to be present with discomfort, right? When a relationship ruptures do happen, we notice them and we don't like it, but, you know, we're not overly zealous in moving towards or kind of collapsing underneath it either. So that's probably more like our owl brain or owl pathway. Whereas it sounds like as you go red, right, there's some sympathetic activation there. And so we would talk about that being kind of on the watchdog pathway. Whereas going blue, retreating, collapsing in, sounds more like that possum pathway. And I especially love so much how you talk about the, like the gradients, right? That there's this fluidity and it's shifting back and it's shifting back and forth, and it's always shifting back and forth. Cause I talk about that a lot too. And we want to categorize it, you know, like we want to be like, well, my kid right now is in this one stage of watchdog. It's like, well, maybe in that exact moment. Sure.
Right.
Okay. But what about the next? And what happens next? And what happens after that?
And what level of watchdog?
Yeah.
Right. Is it a chihuahua?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
or is it a sleeping dog with their ear kind of moving, you know, totally. Tracking, right? Like all yep. the.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah. we have all that.
And,
too.
And that it's co-regulatory, right? Like, I think that's what's so important to get away from what categories, because sometimes we can look as like you said, we could do both. Right. And sometimes if it gets confusing when you're thinking about attachment, well, yeah, I'm definitely much more of a watchdog, but I definitely have my possum qualities, my more, you know, dorsal vagal kind of going away. Right. I have both of those. So it's confusing. Which one am I? And it's so co-regulatory and what's happening in our moment right now and what's happened in our relationship over a period of time really can shift our map, right? We can be in one way with one relationship and then realize, God, I was always a watchdog, but now I'm in this really safe relationship. And I realize I get to live in my owl. I love the owl, right? Because your eyes are open and you hear discomfort. You can live with it. But if we think about it as co-regulatory, it makes so much sense why maybe your child's way out there in the moment, but how do I bring them back towards me rather than how do I change the overall disposition of our relationship? How do I act in this one moment? And to get back to the possum, I love that expression because I think so often our society right now is really centered on, the problem is if we're all activated, right? And I think that those that live in deactivated states sometimes get promoted in our society as being secure,
being active,
right? They're so wise because they don't get reactive. And we can mock emotions and say, really, to be an owl is to be all rational, right? To be in your wise self. And when you go over to the blue, you lose connection to the rich emotional experiences of the world. And I really love helping people recognize that that's actually very dysregulated. It is not only the one that's up there, the other parent going, if you would just be rational, could be very disconnected from the moment. And it's not like, oh, just to get really non-emotional is not the point. It's not actually a secure state. Because when we cut off from our emotions, we can't feel that we're actually threatened.
Right.
We think it's the other person pulling us. If they would just quit being so active, I would be fine.
Yes.
If y'all would just
it's my favorite dysregulated state for sure.
Just all calm down, we would be fine. It's the fact that you're activated is the whole problem. When it's like, no, it's usually the reds or the watchdogs that are bringing couples into therapy, and yet it is the best source and the one that sees the problem with the child, right? Sees that they need help. It's not an over activation. It's, oh, I might see it, but this whole being in the blue or the possum, you know, to get in tune with your own need for those relationships and to get in tune with your own emotions is a real important goal.
So you may have heard that the club is open today for just a few days for new members. And I wanted to share with you what this club member said about her time in the club. This member says, I was way more successful handling a stressful situation than I would have been a year ago. And it is truly a result of the material I've learned through Robin and the club. Oh my gosh, y'all, I love, love, love hearing that. There's no way that we can promise that the stress from your kids is going to change because we're just not in control of anybody else but ourselves. But what we can do is work to change how we respond to those stressors. And that's what we do over in the club. We are open for new members from now until the 28th of April, and we would love to have you. really important goal. And I also can see, and I know y'all would say the exact same thing. I work with so many parents who they have really crashed onto that side of things because everything is just so much, right? Yeah. They've got, it's too much. It's too much chaos. There's no co-regulation for them, either like relationally from just a partner or a friend, but also like socially and culturally. Like we don't support these families in the way that they really need and deserve. And so it makes so much sense that they're going to, and I do tend to use the word crash because I think that's what it feels like to a lot of the parents I work with, like crash onto that possum pathway or into that blue side of the spectrum where it's just like, it's just too much. I'm going to step away and not feel and not be relational. And what I hear y'all saying is, of course, like all these things make perfect sense. And if we can shift our goals away from how do we change that overall to can we be on the lookout for moments where it is safe enough to kind of shift more into that green space, even if it's just a moment.
Even if it's just a moment. And I love, you know, when you're talking about all the things that are happening, that's definitely another part of the model of really trying to bring attachment outside of just the intrapsychic and just the interpersonal and looking at, you know, when you are marginalized and, you know, I think about the trans laws in Texas. You're not paranoid. Like the people are out there, you know, working to actively hurt your family. That's not a paranoid state. And how do you be secure when with racial violence, when you're poor, when you're chronically ill? And like you said, Robin, our culture and our society isn't set up to take care of folks that are outside of, you know, certain norms or what have you, right? When you fall outside of it, then it's very easy to blame those people, like the unhoused or just, you know, or poor people just aren't working hard enough. Well, you know, have you met some of the folks that are, you know what I'm saying? Like it, so there's something inherent in the system that ends up blaming people for their own kind of misfortune and their own, some of the ways in which the symptoms show up. And we really want that to be part of the conversation because in thinking about, like, I love the work even of what has happened to your people and what is still happening to your people and what might I be doing to continue to create a problem, but like basically really raising that awareness of so that we're not unintentionally blaming the poor single parent out there that just doesn't have the right structure, enough structure with childcare, with healthcare, with things that they need that is causing them, their nervous system to be on alert and dysregulated. And then, you know, messages are, well, if you would just relax, you know, if you would just, you know, you should just meditate a little bit and things like that, that's, it's like, yes, that's also true. And also it would help to get child subsidy or to get, you know, free childcare or what have you.
And to be able to take a moment, like even when we're talking about recognizing, you're talking about the possum and you've dropped there and you're right. So you're like, if you don't have resources and you're overwhelmed and you flop or you become a possum, to have the start with deep compassion, no matter where you land, I think the goal is to start, I'm over here for a reason, right? I am feeling exhausted. If your child is, you know, often screaming or having a problem, or there's just it's so painful that your nervous system protecting you is why you're going to that possum place. It's not because you're lazy or not caring or that your child is too bad. It's that your nervous system is wanting to protect yourself.
Right.
Yeah. We say it's not you, it's your amygdala or it's not me, it's my amygdala or whatever.
Yeah. It's just stopping to go, God, I'm right there. If I've collapsed, I can feel myself where I am and I've disconnected. What do I need to do to take care of myself? It's usually almost always the question, what do I need to center myself first before I can get back in there? And to think, oh, I don't have enough support. This is why I'm here. I need compassion. I've been carrying this load. My people have been carrying this load, and I don't have enough support for even daycare right now. And to just center on self-compassion and like, okay, what do I need to do in the moment to help myself pick up and go a little bit closer to the green, not get over there and all of a sudden be in my best place? How can I just take a tiny step?
We are talking about something without totally articulating it. And I wanted to articulate this piece, which is before we even would move into trying to change anything, we really, truly just are with the reality of it. And I think that I experienced this. I assume you do as well. But I think that piece gets skipped over, especially by folks as they start to learn kind of the stuff that, you know, we are talking about a lot. It's almost as if, well, because I know better, or because I shouldn't feel this way, or because I should have more compassion for myself or for other people, we kind of skip the place of just being with ourselves in the reality of like, this sucks. And it makes perfect sense that I feel this way. Of course I do. And we have to spend a moment there before we're gonna shift.
I think that's so important. And I think you're right. I think it's easy to skip over it. Partly because it's painful. Like it's a vulnerable, it's a really vulnerable place. But and then also what can come so quickly is that judgment or the self-loathing even, or so it's like being with it with it's either objectivity, you know, like I, sometimes I think of a, like a social scientist, but just notice, you know, just notice, like take note, you know, like mental notes. It's like, oh, when this happens, this like either something that neutral or hopefully with love and care and compassion, which is what, you know, you guys are talking about, that, so that it doesn't click us away from it because that we're now all of a sudden beating ourselves up. It's more of like, yeah, whatever. Like, this is awful. This is terrible. And I don't know what to do. And like, because you're right. Because just noticing, just the act of noticing pulls you into a little bit of a higher brain state and you have an observing part. And just that alone can take the wind out of the sails of whatever's happening. It's wonderful.
Because it shifts your state.
Yeah. So I think you're right though. I think that we could pay more attention as we talk about it too, about that's often skipped step of the like being with yourself in it, not moving, not trying to move the other person. You know, it's good.
And it can just be a micro moment. But I do think, just like you said, if it can feel really terrifying, like if I'm with myself in that moment. Well, there's a whole lot of words I think that come next, but so often it's some version of I'm going to get stuck there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would love to pull us actually a slightly different direction based on some of the things you were talking about. So we're talking about, you just said, let's, you know, there's these ideas of, can we pull attachment out of like the personal and out of the intrapsychic and look at our systems? And I'm thinking about how when we start to use these compassionate metaphors, whether it be owls, watchdogs, possums, or green, red, blue, and we apply those models to systems, like we apply those models to systems and that are saying things like, you know, unhoused folks, this is somehow their fault and their moral failing, right? That sure, maybe individuals are saying that, but really that's a system statement, right? And that led me to think about like the work that those of us who have so much more privilege, like the three of us sitting here, how we get to, you know, I never want to ever ask victims to sit in a place of compassionate understanding to their perpetrators, but that we kind of get to do that. We get to look at the system and look at the system that's saying things like, well, you know, for the families I work with, you know, they've just got to figure this out. Or, oh my gosh, sometimes I hear things like, well, they're the ones who chose to adopt these kids, or they're the ones that somehow brought this situation upon themselves. They have to figure this out. So this is like, that's a, you know, if we think about that from this, like shifting red as the system shifts red or the system shifts blue, those of us with the privilege and some power, that feels like it could ultimately, I mean, really shift the work that we're doing.
I totally agree, Robin. I feel like it's our job.
Yeah.
You know, that it's our responsibility because we can see it and we have a platform. And that's very much part of why we included it in the book. And even in how we define attachment now, the way that when we're talking about modern attachment, it includes structural systems, historical, cultural, socioeconomic, all, you know, like that's kind of the base of it. And then neurobiology, and then developmental attachment, and then internal working models, and then adult attachment, which is a different thing. And all of that is kind of collapsed into some of these images that we're talking about. So totally could not agree more. And it is helpful, even if you're in it, I think, when other people recognize it for you, again, it's one of those things that we might not can fix it in that moment. But when we put it in the context of like, no, the world, you know, your metronome, I think about neurodiversity. You have a certain, I think of it like a metronome. Your metronome is just your metronome. It's perfect. Yeah. It's exactly what it should be.
Yes.
But the world's metronome is faster or it's different. And it's hard. It's easy if you can't get on that freeway, that the people on the freeway think there's something wrong with you and you think there's something wrong with you. When really what's wrong is that it's not a wide enough berth to hold all the different ways that people function in the world.
Yeah.
So that's another way of thinking of systems. And so just by naming that, it doesn't change it, but it can provide some support for the person to, you know, and then you see all the advocacy, you see a lot of things happening, which is really exciting, where that you can become more active and rather than going blue or going red, you know what I mean? Like, oh no, we can call things out. Another thing that I think is a miss, it's easy to miss, is when we talk about secure relating and we talk about green or wise wisdom, that's not a super soft place.
Right.
Right. That's not nice. Right. Like you can be so powerful. It is the most powerful kind of badass place to be able to make change and to do things.
Oh, I love that. And just all of this discussion about seeing the world as a system is so inspiring and motivating to all three of us and to so many people out there. And, you know, the title of our book, the rest of it is Secure Relating, Holding Your Own in an Insecure World. And that was so intentionally thought through because it's a deep passion that if we can think of these things, not just as in ourselves or in ourselves as individuals in our relationships, but if we can hold the world in mind as a dysregulated state, and what is our part in bringing regulation to our whole systems, like instead of offshooting it, that's their problem. It's like, oh, we are collectively one system. So if we are collectively one, we write in there, like in a collective amygdala hijack right now, right? Like we stay activated and all these things pull us into activation and these systems aren't set up to help us feel secure. And so the goal being, how do we collectively as a system bring our world into more of the green? And we can't be divided and blaming and seeing that the problem is always over there or the other people. Instead, like, what do I do to change the conversation inside myself and to challenge the systems we're part of to make more security for everyone? Yes. And how do we shift systems to be more secure and holding? It's such an important question.
And what I really love about that part is that just like dysregulation is contagious, so is regulation.
Yeah.
And so is security. And so we have this idea of like, we keep talking about spreading security or whatever, that wherever you are, wherever you're listening from, all across the world, that you moving into the state, you making these micro movements towards green, towards your wise mind, your owl state, really does make it safer for the people around you, which then increase, you know what I'm saying? That it creates these little ripples of security and they might be teeny tiny, but if enough of us do this enough of the time and we are practicing and we're working towards it and we're talking about it, I mean, it's very hopeful, you know, going back to hope. It's like we can do something, even if it's just doing something with the person that you're mad at right now or that has harmed you. Like those little micro things matter. And they really do spread. It's contagious. Security is contagious.
In a couple of weeks, I'm going to train essentially child welfare workers. And so I'm working on that right now. And everything we're talking about is like, you know, I'm going to go and be with these folks who are highly dysregulated and they are part of the system, right? They're the ones out there working with the families and they're on the front line and they're going in and supporting families. They're themselves exceptionally dysregulated. Like they often have moved so far away from green. Sometimes have lost a lot of compassion for families, which I say with, of course, zero judgment. Again, it's just
yeah.
The
I used
state
to work. I was
physiology.
An investigator.
Yeah,
yeah.
Me
I
too.
Was an investigator.
Me
so
too.
You were too. Totally. High five on that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yes, and that like they're also working within systems themselves. Right. Whether that's their boss or the legislature or the government system about what do we do? How do we support these folks? And looking at those systems at how far away from green they have gotten. And then I'm just thinking about the role that I am so privileged to offer, right? To go in and to try to stay as green, you know, as owl-brained as possible and to see these folks like, well, of course. This is how you feel at work. And of course you're, you know, fed up with these folks and of course you're, or whatever, you know, they go, of course, shame or blame one or the other. And, you know, the opportunity, again, that those of us with a little more privilege in different kind of ways can go in and see those bigger systems in this way and how much that matters. Mm-hmm. And how it will trickle. I mean, it matters to them. Like they're human beings who deserve to have opportunity to kind of shift into that green space too. But then how that has the opportunity to shift down to, you know, for me, it's for the parents that they're working with, that they're directly servicing, and then the kids of these parents. And I think we have to believe in the power of that. We have to, because how else could we keep doing this work?
Well, and I think we should believe in it and then we should spread it because I think it's real.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think that we do have to kind of protect that hopefulness.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, it makes me think of golly, teachers.
Yes.
All these people on the front lines with these kids and these parents. So what a wonderful opportunity to get to go talk to those frontline workers that make such a big difference. Oh God, that's so smart. So I'm glad whoever brought you. It sounds brilliant.
Well, and even just what you said about teachers, but like the moments matter.
Yeah.
And I was talking to educators last night and they're like, but what do we do? And I was like, listen, the thing is like, neither you or I can answer that question because what you need needs to be provided from your administration and provided from the system. And you and I don't have the power to do that. So that question you're asking me is actually unsolvable. Let's talk about what we can do. Right. And in these moments, you know, can there be one more moment tomorrow in your day of, you know, being secure with ourselves and or maybe offering that to someone else? And then can that be enough? Hey, I'm jumping into the middle of this episode real quick to share with you what this club member has to say about their time in the club. They say, what an incredible community. It was my first Connection Co-Regulate session just now, and it was so incredible to share stories and experiences. Perhaps it's even more profound being across the world from each other. Oh, I totally agree that the fact that the club has members from all corners of the world really does make the experience more profound. I want the club to give you parenting tools, but more than that, I want the club to undo the sense of aloneness, I want the club to create community and togetherness. And by bringing to people all over the world, we're able to do just that. The club is open from now until Friday, April 28th, and we would love to have you.
Right. And you've, I love that. And you started though with being able to recognize with them and for them that the system that they're in, that it makes sense that they're feeling what they're feeling, right? We start there. We haven't jumped to the hopefulness. Can you, because what you're saying, pay attention to your system, both inside you and around you. And of course you're in this double bind with this position that you have to assert that you might not believe in, or these, whatever that is. So starting with that awareness, like we said a while back, of the hard situations are real.
Yeah.
And being able to stay there and then say, okay, with that, what is that one moment that you can do? And I think that that is such an integrative way to work with them. So it's just the core of integration, isn't it? The real right now and the hope of the moment.
Yeah, I like that. And you know, another thing you're doing, Robin, is creating these communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was thinking about that too with teachers or with these workers, that you know, it's kind of like find your people, find the folks that are in your boat, because we need each other. And you know, we can have these little rafts of security. Then it's not just you, but you can go across the hall and you can get so frustrated with your colleague, and then the colleague knows about this and is able to stay regulated and not just go off the rails because you're off the rails.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? That like, it's also about finding those communities. And again, that's just so commendable what you're doing related to parents. But I was thinking, because it can be too much for one person to always have to find that one moment.
Right.
But we can do it together. Together, we can do amazing things.
So true.
And the, not to be afraid to do the identifying and the articulation of what is hard or what is, you know, in some ways impossible. And to bring this kind of back to parents, the secure relating idea of secure relating to yourself.
Totally. Right?
Like just like, this is impossible. This literally is impossible. What I'm, you know, being tasked to do with parenting this child is quite literally impossible. And it can feel so scary to admit that that's true. Like that's the path towards hopelessness, but it's actually not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by you doing that to yourself, like then you are taking care of the part of you that is wants to collapse or that, you know, that needs the care. So this, I love the idea of secure relating with yourself. That, you know, just like when Anne was talking about earlier, like if we yell or if we do the thing, secure relating with ourselves is, you know, we're coming in and consulting with ourselves with care and compassion. And what a wonder, you know, a lot of times, honestly, it's a lot easier to securely relate with other people than it is with ourselves. So absolutely. I love that concept, and it's hard. It's challenging.
It's really hard. I assume that's what, I've never actually led group therapy or actually even been in it. I'm so sorry to admit that out loud, but this is what group therapy is in some ways, I'm so sure. And that's what I've had in mind when I created the club, mm-hmm. was this way of, it is easier to be in relationship with other people this way. So if we bring a group together where that's sort of the explicit purpose, you know, that means everybody's receiving that from each other. And eventually that kind of makes a new map of how you could be that way with yourself.
That's so true. And group, you know, that is my jam right there. And it is one of the most powerful. If there's, you know, if you have listeners that have access to something like that, I am telling you, it is, I think it's more powerful than individual therapy, because we're born into groups. We work in groups. We live in groups. And individual therapy is beautiful and wonderful, but it's, you know, we are both here for you, which is it's not really real life.
Yeah.
versus when you're in a group, man, it is real life. You compete, you have conflict, you love, you have all the big feelings, but with support. So a quick plug for plugging into whether it be a therapy group or again, Robin, one of, you know, Robin's community or a local community, totally into it.
Yeah. Just knowing you're not alone is the biggest start. Like it's one reason I love the title of your book, right? Big baffling behaviors. Like, it's like, you can go, oh, other people have that.
Yeah.
It's not just me. It's not just my family. And I love to do referrals to your parenting experience, because people need that. I am not alone in this system, in this world. And that in and of itself has been shown to be one of the biggest points of secure connection is just that awareness. Because when we are in the most activated state, that's the thing we feel the most. It's just me. I'm alone, and it's going to never stop. I think those are the kind of the three things that sometimes we land on. And we know we have this group that we can go tell about and be in it. And somebody could just see you, just to be seen and not fixed.
Yeah.
It's the deepest part of our secure connection with one another.
Absolutely. Mm. All right, you two. So this book, Secure Relating, it's about to come into the world. When we air this episode, will be 1 week, I think, from official publication date. So tell us about the book and where people can get it and all the fun stuff that's going to go along with it.
Yeah, one thing we're excited about is we're going to be doing a virtual launch with you.
Yes.
That is so fun. We were so excited about getting to do that, because we're going to be having a launch in Austin, May 3rd. And that's super exciting. But we're going to do before that, this virtual for those people out there that have been following us and supporting us, and that we get to celebrate together. And I'm excited.
Yeah. So. And for any of your listeners that want to pick up a copy of the book, join us and join Robin at the virtual launch. You can find out how to sign up for that at therapistuncensored.com. You just hit events. I wish I had a better URL right now, but I don't, because I can't remember what it is. But if you go to therapistuncensored.com, hit events, you'll see it right there. It's the virtual launch. It's free. You just sign up and we'll be there. We can talk. It's going to be a party. That's the way it is. It's going to be a party. We'll do some behind the scenes stuff. You can ask questions. You can make comments. You can talk to Robin. It's just going to be a free for all. It's going to be really fun. It'll be 6:00 Central Time on May 1st. And we really would love for you all to join us there. To pick up the book, you just go to securerelatingbook.com. And if you want a signed copy, there's a way that you can get that. Otherwise, just order it from your local indie store or Amazon or wherever you get your books.
Yeah. And you don't have to go to that website. You can go anywhere. So yeah.
Securerelatingbook.com. And then also, if there's clinicians that are listening that are into this, into modern attachment, into relational neurobiology, really want the latest and greatest live conference on that is May 4th in Austin, Texas. We would love to have you. Anne and I will be there. There's going to be a panel, a BIPOC panel, talking about attachment security and insecurity in marginalized communities. It's just crazy. There's a whole bunch of, it's not like your ordinary conference. We have all these little special things that are happening. So we would love to have you there. And then the podcast. Yeah. We would love for you to check out the podcast, Therapist Uncensored. You can pick that up. You can see that anywhere. You'll find all of the attachment people, the neuroscience people. You'll get to hear them directly on that show. So it's fun. Fun times.
So fun. Okay. So May 1st, a virtual event that you invited me to participate in, which is, again, I just, especially as, it's been 5 years since I moved away from Austin. And recently we've been feeling a lot more like, we really miss our people back there. How can we get to Austin more often? So that part was just so meaningful to me to have this opportunity to like connect back to my Austin people again. So y'all will do that May 1st. Then your conference, is that different than the Austin event or is that all the same thing?
So May 3rd, okay, we're doing a public, May 3rd, we're doing a public talk. It's going to be really fun. It's at the Austin Downtown Public Library, on the rooftop deck. So that'll be fun. And that is especially for the therapy shy people, spouses. Again, if you're a therapist and you're listening to this and you're in Central Texas somewhere, your clients can go to this, your client's spouses, your spouse, just therapy shy people in general. It'll be a real friendly kind of short talk on modern attachment. And then there's also be a book signing and a book celebration that Austin and Connection is who's sponsoring that. It's been fabulous. It's a local nonprofit in Austin, Texas. And then they also are sponsoring and hosting the conference the next day, which is, I think it's called Modern Attachment, Bridging the Science to Real Life.
Super. So, well, that's a lot, y'all. That'll all definitely be down in the show notes. So links and directions on how to find all those things will make that really easy for everyone listening. And I know I have a lot of Austin and Central Texas listeners, so that'll be really fun to have folks show up and support you all, but support this way of being in the world.
Totally. So, totally.
Yeah.
And if you guys come say hi and let us know that Robin sent you. It'd be wonderful.
Well, Sue and Anne, this has been so fun. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you do in the world, which is remarkable. It's life-changing for folks. It's been life-changing for me. Thank you for your friendship and just for our collegial relationship and, you know, the fact that we've been able to maintain it over all these years. Thank you.
It's been so fun. Thank you. I've loved being on here with you.
Me too. Totally grateful. Really, really appreciate you stepping up for us.
All right, y'all, we will see you back here next week. Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now what's. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day. We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it, and if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. or you can just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.